It's poverty.
It's crime.
Unemployment.
Corruption.
Accountability.
The energy crisis.
Inflation.
We are worried.
That South Africa has myriad problems on all fronts is a given. But the time has come for us to look for real solutions. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this MoneyWeb podcast will discuss those solutions on how South Africans can solve problems by having tough conversations and drawing on the insights of South Africa's top business leaders. Welcome to Fix SA. Today, this is a guest I've really been looking forward to talking to again. Someone who had a front row seat to history for almost two decades in this country. You'll know well that Zelda Lakhlanji served Nelson Mandela in many roles and became one of his closest aides. And she's joining me today to talk about a new book. It's called What Nelson Mandela Taught Me, Timeless Lessons on Leadership and Life. And I think this is important because it's an opportunity for us to think about that in terms of the business community in South Africa and how some of those lessons can help recalibrate the country. It all has its start when Zelda faced a public backlash after what can only be described as a thoughtless tweet. And people asked you, have you heard nothing from, or have you learnt nothing from Nelson Mandela? And this book is a response to sharing Mandela's teachings on humility, respect, honesty, listening, and I guess how to handle mistakes. Zelda, welcome to Fix SA. And the book, as I've just mentioned, is built on this Twitter storm. I don't really want to rehash that. If people want to know about that, they can buy the book. But you do write early on, getting back to my Twitter lesson, I learned that compassion, respect, humility, sincerity, kindness, and ethics are fundamentally part of our characters, but also of leadership. Do you think we display enough of that in both the public and the private sector in this country?
Well, thank you very much for having me, Jeremy. I don't think, we do enough to establish that those are the principles and the ethos that we all live by. I think what made Nelson Mandela such a remarkable leader and such an authentic leader is that you never had to question, you know, what these principles or these philosophies were. He lived by these every single day in the smallest of actions, and that made him so relatable and believable as a leader.
Often difficult, though, because he, by his own admission, and you also reference in the book that mistakes were made all the time. But the art and essence, I think, of good leadership is being able to recalibrate, recognize the mistake, pivot and move on.
Absolutely. And he had no problem, if the mistake was made, to be able and to be the first to admit, that he was wrong about something. The story that comes to mind is when he tried to reduce the voter age from 18 to 14 before the 1994 elections. And the entire ANC NEC rejected the idea. And Madiba was the only one, and he was stubborn because he wanted the voter age reduced. And people tried to convince him otherwise, but he would not let go of his idea until he picked up a newspaper one morning. In the newspaper, he saw this cartoon of a baby in diapers casting its vote. And from that cartoon, he changed his mind because he realized that this was far more serious. It was not just an ANC issue. People everywhere thought that the idea was a bit ridiculous. So he was the first thing, to say, okay, I've made a mistake and I'll give in to your suggestions. So it just shows you, he was never too big or too important to realize and to admit to those mistakes.
But you also make the point a little later in the book that there were many arguments within the ANC NEC itself, and there was a time when he was rounded upon, where he was shouted down by leaders within that unit. He backed down. He learnt the lesson, I think you said, but also parked it in the back of his mind. He wasn't a person who failed to remember, but often there was no revenge motive there. So often, Zelda Lakhlanji,
yes,
in business, there is that that revenge motive. You've done something to me, therefore I'm going to get you. And that's poor leadership, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think what we should learn from his time in prison is, you know, that he came to the realization that resentment is a self-inflicted wound. And, you know, if you hold on to that resentment, it will dictate your future actions. And it's not good for business, and it's not good for you as an individual or as a leader yourself. So I think that comes out very clear in his leadership style, is that, you know, yes, he did not forget what happened, but he did not allow it to dictate his future actions or his future relationships, even with people.
Zelda, we live in a new era now, one of a coalition government or a government of national unity. And you make another point. To lead in conflict, you write, one must also build important alliances. And you say that Madiba was particularly good at that, as current South African politicians now grapple with the concept of coalitions. It's useful to look at his style on how to build effective partnerships. The coalition government in South Africa seems to be working at the moment. We, of course, are just over 100 days, municipally and provincially, not so much. What were those lessons in terms of building partnership and coalition, often within a very fractious environment?
I think what stands out for me, Jeremy, is the fact that he always, in whatever circumstances he found himself, he surrounded himself with divergent voices. You know, voices really from all sides of any situation, from all sides of the political divide, because he realized and he knew that if you include all these opinions and you take them into account, that is how you get to the best solutions, because people come with fresh ideas and with unique life experience. And he truly believed, you know, from his years in prison, what he learned there is that you can learn something from everyone, even your enemy. So he took those at heart, and he really practiced those in his presidency and also outside in politics, surrounding himself with independent thinkers so that they could inform him to make better decisions.
You also talk about the strategy, though, and this I find very interesting, and it's a useful lesson for business leaders. His legal training taught him, you write, that any deal is always based on both parties feeling that they've won when in fact they have sacrificed something too. Again, that is the perfect art of compromise, is it not?
Absolutely. And of course, his charismatic personality also added to that to make a person feel safe, even though they may have lost something in the deal. He was very adamant that things, you know, negotiations shouldn't be seen as personal battles between people. Those two important lessons that he taught me about never to allow the enemy to dictate the grounds for battle is one of the things that I practice, or I try to practice, in everyday life. And it's such an important lesson for leadership as well. You may be with your competitor in a very tense situation and negotiations, but always or never allow the competition to determine that grounds for battle. So it was something that actually came very natural to him at the end as well.
I want you to tell me the story about the visit to the late Hansie Cronje, and it's all about making mistakes. And you write, you'll have to face the consequences of your action. But he also went on to say that we will be here on the other side of whatever difficulty you are facing. What happened when you went to George?
So, yes, we were invited, or he and Mrs. Marshall were invited to a fundraiser at Fan Court. And then I mentioned that Hansie lived at Fan Court, Hansie and Bertha. And then Madiba announced that he wanted to go and see Hansie, and we would try to persuade him otherwise, to say, well, you know, it wasn't known as cancel culture those days, but no one wanted to be associated with him. And we weren't sure if it was good for his image, actually, you know, to be seen with someone that has really let the country down. And I mean, this was his most important lesson as well to everyone. He went to Hansie's house. He had tea with Hansie. And after completing the casual conversation, he told Hansie three things. And the first thing was, he said to him, "My boy, you made a big mistake." It almost elevated the mistake that Hansie had made, because no one wanted to hear Nelson Mandela say, "You make a mistake." So, you know, it was hard, very hard to hear that from Hansie. And I could see that he suffered. It's almost, when you make a mistake, you don't want Nelson Mandela to know. know about it. But in that moment, immediately, Mr. Mandela then said to him, now you have to face the consequences. By doing that, he showed Hansie that he was not going to condone his behavior. He's not going to try and change the outcome. And there would be consequences. And as we know, there was going to be charges brought against Hansie. But then the lifesaver came at the end when he said to him, but this does not mean we love you less. And isn't that a beautiful way of dealing with a person, you know, with compassion and kindness? Because Nelson Mandela understood that we are all such complex human beings and we all make mistakes. And if we deal with each other, well, you know, with compassion and kindness like that, we allow people also to learn from their mistakes. So that's one of my favorite stories of Madiba, and where I really saw him show his utmost humanity to a person in distress.
And Zelda, on a bigger canvas, you say that he also understood that for the country to avert civil war, it was necessary to show compassion in order to forgive and move forward. I mean, obviously, that later came out in the Hansie Cronje story. But you also say we hardly see this kind of empathy these days. And that's a real problem in the kind of dog-eat-dog world of not only politics in South Africa, but also the hard-nosed way of business.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's that very simple ethos of putting yourself in someone else's shoes, you know, trying to understand their suffering and their battles. And very few of us, because of the fast pace also that we live in today, very few of us actually take the time to try and imagine that and show that kind of empathy and sympathy sometimes, you know, to people. So I think Madiba was particularly good at that, you know, showing people or taking hands with people, you know, as again, the opposition. Trying to also put himself in their shoes and they are trying to imagine their fears and they trying to understand, you know, what they were facing. And that made him such a successful negotiator, and because he had the ability to see things from all different sides. So I think that's something that we should pay a lot more attention to, and it will make the world a much kinder place if we do so with a little bit compassion, a bit more compassion.
Zelda, I'm going to mix my metaphor slightly here, but in order to see everything from that full 360 degrees that you reference, you also have to listen. So you're not only using your eyes, but your ears as well. And you write about Mandela's approach to listening and why it is such an important skill in today's divided world, divided South Africa sometimes, divided communities. What did you learn about his approach to listening?
Well, Jeremy, the first childhood memory that Nelson Mandela had was about learning the art of listening. He was, as a young boy, and I detail it in what Nelson Mandela taught me, he was allowed in meetings of the elders in the tribe, in the Tembu tribe. The sole purpose, what he witnessed there was the sole purpose of the leader of the meeting was to listen to all the submissions made around the table. So the leader was only listening. And then at the end, the leader gave a summary of all the inputs that were given, not his own opinion. And that, for me, had an unquestionable influence on Nelson Mandela's own ability to listen. He listened to people with the intention of understanding them and not with the intention of always responding. And I think with instant gratification and smartphones today, we listen to respond because there's this very unhealthy environment that we live in, that you have to be the smartest or you have to have most likes or the most popular social media post, whereas we then lose the ability to really listen to understand. So for me, that was something that we practice also every single day. And sometimes, you know, we would just look at you while you give your submission. And at the end, he would just say to you, oh, yeah, very well, I see. And that meant that in that moment, he saw you and he observed you completely. But it didn't mean that he necessarily agreed with you. So I think, you know, that's also something that a leader should be able to do, is just to listen to people and really pay attention to body language and all the things that come with it, you know, but really listening with the intention to understand where the other point is coming from.
And let me suggest to you, Zelda, that is the most difficult thing, because I like the point that you make, is that we listen only to respond. And in using that approach, we tend to filter possibly the most important stuff out. It requires an enormous amount of patience. And I would suggest that that is something that is sorely lacking in society right now. I'm not asking you to be a psychologist or even a philosopher, but how do you think you get that right? How do you think you fix that?
You know, I've got a friend, Jeremy, that actually, and it sounds very condescending when you do it to grown-ups, but it's necessary in society. I've got a friend that when she gives instructions to her children, she actually asks them to repeat what they heard so that she could see whether they interpret what she asked correctly. And, you know, sometimes you have to do that because I even, you know, in my own family, I sometimes say something and then from the responses I hear, immediately I notice, you know, that whatever I said was interpreted wrong. And you have to, of course, you have to provide for the fact that people interpret things differently. And but when you're in front of a person, there's nuance you can read. And, you know, for me, I try to really, really listen to the person and pay attention to the finest detail of their words. And I think that makes me a little bit better listening. And then also that thing that you mentioned earlier, you know, trying to put myself in someone's shoes when they say something, because it's from their objectivity that they are, you know, trying to convey something to me. And it's really helpful. I find it helpful.
I'm not for one moment suggesting that you ever sat in on a cabinet meeting, unless you're going to tell me that you did.
No.
But but having used the dynamic of listening, which is really important, how then did he corral all of that into making a clear and cogent decision, which, Zelda, might sometimes go against maybe what could be a broader consensus?
Absolutely. You know what? Considering all points of view like he did, he then seeked solidarity, first of all, from his own party and his own comrades. But, you know, he had the skill also to know when persuasion was necessary, that very fine intuition. And I think, Jeremy, for him, it was important to make sure that, you know, everyone around the table buys into the idea, the common purpose that he's trying to sell at the end. And I think that's what we also miss in society today, is that we are very divided over what our common purpose in South Africa may be, because of politicians polarizing society with politics and so on. But I think, you know, that is very important, that the common purpose is there. And that's a tool that he used to get people behind an idea. Even if the idea was born from an opposition party, he sold it in such a way that, you know, everyone bought into it and supported it at the end.
Zelda, what was his approach? And again, good leaders know when to take time off. And I think that's one of the single biggest problems that we're facing in this country, is that we're on 24/7, 365 days a year. But I think he did understand, or maybe you'll correct me, maybe he didn't, but the whole notion of the work-life balance. And as I'm asking you this question, I have the book in front of me, and there is this wonderful picture of him sitting in a deck chair. I think it's a deck chair in Mauritius.
Yeah, it's plastic chair.
With the wind, with the water lapping at his feet. He knew how to do that, and maybe even compartmentalize.
Absolutely. You know, he had a standing arrangement that between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, no one could get hold of him. And no matter what happened, you would not phone him. You would not wake him up in those 2 hours. Now, he didn't always sleep, but sometimes he would say to me, you know, I miss prison. And then I would say, but Madiba, you can't say something like that. You know, it's not a good thing to say, and you shouldn't allow anyone in public to hear you say that. And then he would laugh at me and say, no, what he meant is that he missed the time in prison to think, because he had time to think. And very few of us really take an hour, 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day and just contemplate our issues. And I think, again, that made him such a successful leader, because he knew, you know, that for him, he had to have that headspace. And he got that through the 2 hours in the afternoon that were almost sacrosanct to his life. So I don't think we do that enough. And I think we are so overwhelmed with technology and the speed of things that we would come up with much better solutions if we sometimes, well, the leaders and business leaders and so on, if they take the time, you know, every day just to contemplate things properly.
At one point, he was the most recognized person in the world. And as a result of that, he wielded, Zelda, an enormous amount of power and influence. What was his view on power and how it should be used responsibly?
Well, he understood his power, that's for sure. But he, I think more importantly, understood when not to use that power. He had the power to submit his former enemies. He had the power to declare full-scale war. But he chose not to because he realized that the burden of a civil war in South Africa would not be only a burden for the losers, but for the winners at the end too. So he understood that your power is something to be used in a very wise way. To rather bring people together than to divide, because he could see the consequences of not using the power correctly. So for me, today, again, as we deal with cell phones and social media and so on, we all have this newfound power where, we could destroy a person with one sentence. So it's for us to really take that responsibility of that power, this newfound power that we have, serious, and see how can you use it to bring people together rather than divide people, like I, for instance, did with those tweets of mine many years ago. But that's really understanding your power and how to yield that power in a positive way.
So this is the last question then, and you segue perfectly into it. If, and I, again, I know that this is subjective, but based on your close relationship with him, if he were to offer one piece of advice to South Africans today in this very, very different time that we live in, what do you think that might be?
I think, he would be very excited, Jeremy, of where we are in South Africa. And there's all this talk about dialogue from the Thabo Mbeki Foundation, and President Ramaphosa spoke about it in his opening of Parliament. And I think, it's for us ordinary South Africans, we need to have the part of that dialogue, those dialogues in our, those much despised WhatsApp groups in our community. We need to have conversations, healthy conversations, and talk about the difficult stuff, because we cannot expect the government, only on their level of politicians to work together, while we as society and as at grassroots level, we don't step into that arena as well. So we need to find as many possible ways to work together, to be inclusive, and to come up with solutions for our country and to work together and to come up with those solutions. So I think Madiba would be very excited with where we are and people working together at the moment, but he would encourage ordinary South Africans and remind us how resilient we are as a nation. He always gave South Africans credit and said it was not only the leaders that averted that civil war, but ordinary people, ordinary South Africans contributed to the peaceful transition in South Africa. So he would remind us, that's all of us, the people that lived in at the same time as he did. We can come up with solutions for this country if we all work together. We know that. And he would remind us really, to work together and to seek that divergent voices and to be stronger together, as the Springboks say.
I think this is a real primer for business leaders in South Africa. The book is called What Nelson Mandela Taught Me: Timeless Lessons from Leadership and Life. The author is the well-known Zelda Lakhranji, and the publisher is Tafelberg. Zelda, thank you very much indeed. Let's keep working together towards a better future for South Africa. Thanks for listening to this Fix SA podcast. For more episodes posted every second Friday, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.